Translation: although I am not easily knowable by the conditioned soul, you have known me today because you know that my personality is not constituted of anything material, and specifically not of the five gross and three subtle elements. Translation responsively. Although I am not easily knowable,
by the conditioned soul,
you have known me today,
because you know
that my personality is
not constituted of anything material.
And specifically,
not of the five gross
and three subtle elements. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki. Knowledge of the Supreme Absolute Truth does not necessitate negation of the material manifestation, but understanding of spiritual existence as it is. To think that because material existence is realized in forms, therefore, is realized in forms, therefore, spiritual existence must be formless, is only a negative material conception of spirit. The real spiritual conception is that spiritual form is not material form. Brahma appreciated the eternal form of the Lord in that way, and the personality of Godhead approved of Brahma's spiritual conception. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord condemned the material conception of Krishna's body, which arises because he is apparently present like a man. The Lord may appear in any of his many, many spiritual forms, but he is not materially composed, nor has he any difference between body and self. That is a way of conceiving the spiritual form of the Lord. ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरान्तस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाखया चक्षुरुन्मिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणा रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादान् सहगणा ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च हे कृष्णा करुणा सिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिका कान्ता राधाकान्ता नमोऽस्तुते तप्तकाञ्चन गौराङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वाञ्छकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्येव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे भूतैर्महाद्भिर्यमा पुरो विभु निर्माय शेते अदमूष पुरुष भुङ्क्ते गुणान् षोडश षोडशात्मक सोलङ्कृशिष्ट भगवान् वचांसि मे हरे कृष्ण. This purport is very profound because in this purport the core arguments of the impersonalists and the Mayavadis is cut into pieces, and that has been done with a very simple logic. So in the Upanishadic version of presenting the Absolute Truth, the methodology used is called the process of neti neti. Neti means na iti, meaning not this. So when you read Upanishads, when the absolute is defined, it is defined in the form of this is not matter. Okay, for example, if you pick Bhagavad Gita, if you see the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna himself applies the principle of negation while describing the soul, while describing the characteristics of soul, right? There are many verses in the second chapter, from 11th till 30th, where Krishna negates the material conception of soul and presents that the soul is transcendental. We can see, Nainam chindandi shastrani nainam dahati pavakaha na klebayantyu abaha na shosheti marutaha. It is a verse of negation, right? Nainam chindandi shastrani. The soul cannot be cut into pieces by any weapon. Nainam dahati pavakaha. Pavakaha means the fire. Fire cannot burn the soul. And nothing can wither the soul, nothing can wet the soul. So these are different negation of the characteristics of the soul. So Krishna himself applies this principle of neti, the principle of negation, in presenting something which has a positive existence. So the logic in itself is very simple. So if you pick Upanishads, there are hundreds of verses which are negating the material qualities. And Srila Prabhupada makes this very important point that just by negating a material quality, that doesn't establish a spiritual quality. Yes, it is very true that we have to negate the material quality, but that in itself is insufficient to establish a spiritual quality. So this is a very important point. And this point is coming from the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, we can see this basic argument posed by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers. For example, in conversation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Prakashananda Saraswati, in conversation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and even the conversation between Gopinath Acharya and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, these kinds of points were discussed to establish the spiritual qualities, that there is the possibility of spiritual form, there is a possibility of spiritual qualities, there is a possibility of spiritual activities. This is a complete different realm compared to material name, form, qualities and activities. So here, the real spiritual conception is that spiritual form is not material form. It's a very deep point that the spiritual form is not material, or there is an existence of a completely a different realm. It's a news, you know. This is the important point in the Vaishnava philosophy, that there are realms where the logic cannot reach. So general statement of the scriptures and many aspects of Upanishads is based on logic and reasons. But there are realms where logic or reasons have no access. So that is where the Vaishnava philosophy comes. That is the significance of Vaishnava philosophy, which is beyond logic and reason. That's why the name of our philosophy is Achintya Bheda Abheda Tattva. So the Achintya aspect is very important, because Achintya shows very clearly that we cannot reach that realm with logic or reason. How can we know that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is a cowherd boy? He is a blue boy. How can we understand with logic and reason? It is impossible. How can we understand that the spiritual realm is in the shape of a lotus flower? and there are lotus feet petals, and in the middle core of the spiritual realm is the Golok Vrindavan. How can we understand that? Just by logic or reason. Srila Prabhupada gives the example. Say if we go to a field, and suppose we go to a field and if we eat a mango plucked from the mango tree, so how is it possible to understand just by analyzing the mango, or just analyzing the seed of the mango, or analyzing the whole mango tree, what are the characteristics of the farmer who planted that mango seed? Is it possible? There is no possibility. So you can apply how much amount of logic or reason to understand about the farmer, but one cannot, because that is beyond the logic and reason what we apply on this mango. In the same way, how much ever we study the material world, we cannot understand about the spiritual world. Not possible. So the scientists, they try to study the material nature very thoroughly, and they come to the conclusion that there cannot be any creator. Whereas the impersonalists, they try to understand the material nature and they accept that there is something spiritual, but they do that on the basis of negation. So negation in itself is not a positive definition. Right? That's why they say, okay, there cannot be any form for the Lord, because form means limited, form means suffering. So there cannot be any form for the Absolute, and there cannot be any limitation to the Absolute. Yes, it is true that there cannot be any material form and there cannot be any material limitation to the Absolute, which are all true, but that is not giving any positive understanding about the Absolute. So this is the sad condition of the Mayavadis, impersonalists. That's why towards the end of this purport, Srila Prabhupada makes his point that there is no duality when it comes to the spiritual form of the Lord. There is no inside or outside for Krishna. There is no spirit and body for Krishna. Everything is spiritual. Srila Prabhupada often criticized Dr. Radhakrishnan, right? He was the representative of all the Mayavati impersonalists for Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada used to criticize him so heavily. And especially, initially, Srila Prabhupada used to read Dr. Radhakrishnan's purport. So he had the version of Bhagavad Gita where Radhakrishnan had translated and had written the purport. So when he used to give initial lectures, he used to read the translation from that book and he used to explain. So in the purport, it was written that he used to differentiate between Krishna's inside and outside. It's not that you have to surrender unto Krishna, but one needs to surrender unto the unborn within Krishna. That's why Srila Prabhupada very clearly mentions in many purports, that is, people who are writing commentaries on Bhagavad Gita, they cannot understand that Krishna is non-dual. There is no difference between inside and outside. It is the same person. The Prabhupada was heavily criticized. At the same time, Srila Prabhupada was very compassionate. It was mentioned one time, Srila Prabhupada was in Chennai, and that was the time Dr. Radhakrishnan, he was about to pass away, and he was completely paralyzed. He was in a stroke, completely paralyzed. He couldn't move, he couldn't do anything. Then Srila Prabhupada made a statement that he has tried to kill Krishna by his purports. Now he is suffering because of that reason. In a compassionate way, Srila Prabhupada mentioned this. Even though Prabhupada knew what he has done, at the same time he was compassionate. Now he is suffering. He is mentioning in a very compassionate way. Not in a, you know, he must suffer, not in that way. Even though he very heavily criticized this personality. So this is the bad fortune of impersonalists. There is an example of trying to lick a bottle of honey when it is completely closed. So how much ever they lick this bottle of honey outside, they cannot taste. In the same way, even though they read Bhagavad Gita, even though they read Srimad Bhagavatam, they cannot actually enter into the pastime. They cannot enter into the qualities of the Lord. They cannot enter into the form of the Lord. They cannot appreciate thoroughly, because they are still outside because they cannot understand that there is a possibility of spiritual form. This, this is the the famous verse in the Upanishads. It is mentioned, Apani Pado Javano Grahita Pashyatya Chakshu Sashrunotya Karna. So this verse is famously quoted by Mayavadis. We can all see in Chaitanya Charitamrita as well, the Mayavadis quoting this verse. It says, Apani Pado. Apani means, Pani means hand. Apani means the Lord is without any hands. Javano Grahita. Javano Grahita means, but still he can accept the offering. It's a contradiction. Apani Pado, Javano Grahita, Pashyati Achakshu. Pashyati, he sees Achakshu. Means he doesn't have any Chakshu, he doesn't have any eyes. Even though he doesn't have any eyes, he can see everything. Sash Rinotya Karna. And he hears everything, even though he doesn't have any ears. So this is the position of the Lord. So even in Upanishads, when there are statements about the personality of Godhead, they are using contradictions as a mean to give something which is higher. So they are using contradictions as a tool to dismantle the material misconception. So how can one see at the same time not have eyes? Similarly, in Isha Upanishad also we can see, you know, the Lord is, he is sitting at one place at the same time, he can walk. Sorry, it's not in that way. Even though, you remember what is that? He is faster than everyone else. At the same time, he doesn't have any legs, right? He walks, it doesn't walk. Yeah, these are contradictions. These contradictions are present to give some truth which is higher than the material logic and reason. So that's why the positive understanding is presented in the Vaishnava literature. So in fact, in the conversation between Gopinath Acharya and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he tried to present all logic and reason to negate the personality of Godhead. And he quoted different verses. And he also said it's not possible for the Lord to appear in this world because there is no mention of avatar in Kali Yuga. So there is no question of Leela avatar in Kali Yuga. So this personality, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, cannot be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When Gopinath Acharya, who was a great devotee of Mahaprabhu, when he heard that, he became very upset. And he tried to defend himself. He tried to defend for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he presented many arguments. He presented that, yes, there is mention that there won't be any avatars in Kali Yuga, but that is mentioning about the Leela avatar. However, the Lord has appeared as Yuga avatar to spread the Harinam Sankirtan. So this was the statements of Gopinath Acharya. And finally, he presented so many things. Still, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, along with followers, didn't get convinced. At that point, Gopinath Acharya quoted this verse from 14th chapter of 10th canto, the prayers of Brahma. Here also is a prayers of Brahma, and in which it is mentioned that prasada lesha anugrahita evahi janaditattvam bhagavan mahimno na chani ekopi chiram vichannan. That is, if one has got a small amount of mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then he can understand about the personality of Godhead. He can understand about the name of the Lord. He can understand the glories of the Lord. But if one lacks a tinge of mercy of the Supreme Lord, then one cannot understand anything. So what the impersonalists lack is the mercy of the Lord. Why do they lack mercy of the Lord? Because they don't want the mercy of the Lord. It's not that the Lord's mercy is available all the time. He is ready to distribute. But if somebody doesn't want, then it is not available. So that's why in the process of jnana, they want to perform austerities and they want to approach the impersonal aspect of the Lord by their own endeavor. They don't want the mercy. And it is said the highest aspect of the Lord is that the Lord is merciful. Kripa Shakti. So highest Shakti of the Lord is Kripa Shakti. And they don't want the Shakti, this most important Shakti of the Lord. So it becomes very difficult to make progress. Klesha Atikatara Stesham Avyakta Sakta Chedasam Avyaktam Higadar Dukham Deha Vadbhar Avapyate. So it is so difficult to make progress by worshipping the impersonal aspect of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they can't make any progress. So it becomes struggle like anything. So this is the reality. So what is required is only a little bit of mercy of the Lord. And since the devotees want the mercy of the Lord, they get the mercy of the Lord, and the whole process of Krishna consciousness becomes much easier. As it is mentioned in this verse, although I am not easily knowable by the conditioned soul. We cannot know Krishna just so easily. We can know Krishna only through the mercy of the devotees. And only through bhakti. Bhaktiyamam abhijananti yavanyaschami tattvataha. Krishna makes so many statements in Bhagavad Gita. Bhaktiya ranya shakya aham evam vidhorjita. Jnadam drashtam cha tattvena praveshtam cha parantapa. 11th chapter. That is, only through bhakti can I be known. Why we can only know Krishna by bhakti? Because Krishna has all the right to conceal himself if he doesn't want to. That is his prerogative. Naham prakasha sarvasya yoga maya samavrata, 7th chapter. Naham prakasha sarvasya, if I don't want, I don't reveal myself to materialists and to impersonalists. I don't reveal myself. So that is Krishna. If he doesn't want, he won't. So the whole process of bhakti is very personal. If he wants to reveal, he can. And if he doesn't, he won't. So here, since Brahma has approached the Supreme Lord through bhakti, so the austerities performed by Brahma is austerities in devotional service. And since the Lord is pleased with that, he is ready to reveal himself. So he has revealed himself and he is telling, you have known me today because you know that my personality is not constituted of anything material. So this is only possible by mercy of the Lord. Then we can see when we come to Krishna consciousness, we don't have any understanding about spiritual form. Who ever understood about the Satchidananda form of the Lord? It is completely beyond our conception. Did we understand that Krishna's form is spiritual? Or did we understand anything like, was there any solid understanding what is spiritual or material before coming to Krishna consciousness? Nothing. At best, one may think that I want to be spiritual. If you go around, if you speak to people, they want to be spiritual. It is mentioned in one of the surveys done in Australia that from the age group from 19 till 30, 50% of the people thinks that there is something beyond one lifetime. And also there is something spiritual. 50% of the population. And 30% don't know. So they are like, whatever. And rest, 20% denies completely anything beyond this material body and this material life. So even though 50% knows that there is something beyond, they lack knowledge what is material and what is spiritual. And it is beyond our mental speculation. So that's why Srila Prabhupada said, by mental gymnastics and by mental speculation, one can maximum come to the platform of Brahman. That is, there is something beyond matter, but they cannot positively define the qualities of Brahman or the absolute truth. It's not possible. So the logic can maximum reach up to the level of the soul and the level of the Brahman. That's the maximum. Beyond that, it is not possible. Beyond that, we need the mercy. See, so the whole Vaishnava's philosophy is resting upon mercy of the Lord and the devotees. Without mercy, there is no access. So that's why our preaching is such that we can give Agyada Sukriti, which is actually mercy. We are giving opportunity for people to perform some devotional activities unknowingly that they get some mercy of the Lord. Their sukriti increases. That is, the devotional credit increases. What does that mean? It means they are receiving some mercy of the Lord. So they are getting sufficient sukriti, sufficient devotional piety, sufficient mercy, so that they can now accept Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So our movement, the whole movement is based on building agyata sukriti. See, so here we are actually going beyond any logic, we are going beyond any reason. We are just coming to the platform, okay, people should get some mercy, and that is the only way they can make progress. And the same principle applies to ourselves also, that we need mercy of the Lord. So there is no other way. We need mercy of the devotees, there is no other way for us to make progress. So it is mentioned. So when we do our endeavor in Krishna consciousness, when we do our devotional service, we are not just dependent on our endeavor. Rather, we are dependent on mercy of the Lord. So our devotional service is a means to attract the mercy of the Lord. So we are not just thinking that, okay, I'm doing performing devotional service and that's about it. And you know, everything will happen automatically. No, we are begging for mercy of the Lord. So mercy is often qualified as causeless mercy. Can anyone qualify for the causeless mercy? Can anyone qualify for the causeless mercy? Not possible, because causeless mercy means there is no particular cause to get that mercy. So when we understand that we are not qualified, that becomes the qualification to get the causeless mercy. Because one is coming to the platform of some humility, then one thinks, okay, I'm not really qualified. Then we pray to the Lord, that becomes the qualification for the causeless mercy. That understanding that one is not really qualified. So this is humility, and it is not easy to come to the platform of humility. So we need to just at least act on the platform of humility. We need to just try to serve in the platform of humility, try to chant in the platform of humility, as it is mentioned in Shikshashtakam, you know, Trinatapi Svinichena Tharoriva Sahishnana Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari. If one wants to constantly chant Hare Krishna Mahamantra, then one has to adopt these two qualities, tolerance and humility, which is not easy, which requires work. And when we see in our own consciousness, we can see a lot of problems. We need to see that at least, then try working on it. So that is the only way we can actually make progress. It is only through humble chanting that we can make progress, because chanting is an essential component of our spiritual progress. Essential component. So only when we develop our chanting, then only we can make progress. So everything, all the devotional service, what we do, it has to go along with our chanting. Similarly, our chanting should manifest in the form of the services. So both goes hand in hand. Those who are advanced mean their chanting is also very advanced. So we need to move in that platform. Then we need to contemplate into ourselves. We see mistakes, then we need to correct those mistakes. Otherwise, there is no possibility of making advancement. And when we make advancement, then Krishna becomes more and more of a reality. Currently, Maya is the reality. Because we can see how the Maya is attacking us and we are in trouble. So we can see Maya face to face. But as we make progress, Krishna becomes a reality. We think about Krishna more. We become more conscious what we are doing in our Krishna consciousness. We become conscious what service we are doing. For whom are we doing this service? So it is just like when we are sleeping and doing service, and we are getting awakened and then doing service. There is a difference between these two. So this is the platform of advancement. When we advance, then we see, okay, we are doing this service for Krishna. We understand, okay, there is a personality like Krishna. We accept more and more about Krishna. And when Krishna becomes a reality in our consciousness, then it becomes much easier to chant Krishna's names. We'll be able to hear Krishna's names more. We will be able to think about Krishna more. So these devotional activities becomes more prominent in our life. And we don't basically get bored while chanting. It happens sometimes. Boring. Chanting becomes boring. You know, just trying to finish out the rounds. So we can go above that platform as we make progress. It is by, of course, by chanting, as Rupa Goswami says, Swadikramat Bhavati Tadgata Moolahantri. That is Kramat. Slowly, chanting becomes relishable. Not overnight. Kramat, step by step. Tadgata Moolahantri. By repeatedly chanting, engaging in devotional service, the core of our heart become cleansed. Moolahantri, the ignorance is destroyed. Then chanting becomes better and better. So we have to wait patiently for this to happen, but we need to understand that this is the process. And we need to see some positive results as we move ahead in our devotional service. Then we develop appreciation for the transcendental form of the Lord. We develop appreciation for transcendental activities of the Lord. We don't feel bored hearing pastimes. We see, we can relish the varieties of pastimes of Krishna. And then the attachment for matter becomes diminished. It's very interesting. The more we develop attraction for Krishna and his pastimes, his glories and his activities, that much we feel insignificant the material energy. Because now if you see, the material energy is coming in front of our face. Okay, this kind of enjoyment, this kind of attraction, this kind of allurements coming straight in front of our eyes. Oh, it looks attractive. However, the more we develop attraction for Krishna, this becomes actually goes down. Yesterday, I think Prabhu was mentioning the verse of, you know, Kurvandi Govatsabhatam Mahadhim. That is the whole devotional process. What happens? It becomes the water, the whole ocean of material existence becomes the water in the hoofprint of a calf. It's a reality. So we need to see that as we make progress in devotional service. At least we should see, at least it is reducing. And if it is not reducing, we have to contemplate, we have to take guidance, and we need to see why we are not making progress. We have to really see into ourselves. It is, you know, it is the process. It is very important for us. Okay, I'll just stop here and see if there are any questions or comments. Yes, bro. Humility. What does humility mean? Okay, Prabhupada defines humility in the 13th chapter as there is no, one is not anxious to be glorified, to be noticed, to get respect. When we do some devotion service or if we do some activities, we have in our mind that we need to get recognition. We want others to notice that. We want others to appreciate that or possibly glorify us. So we have this mentality in our mind. So one aspect of humility is that one is devoid of this hankering for respect. So one is ready to offer all respects to others and at the same time not expecting any respect for ourselves. So this is the platform of perfect humility. It's a very advanced platform. Yes, bro. How to go deeper into the chanting of the holy name. Actually, I can repeat whatever I have heard. The process in itself is very simple. One needs to attentively chant and hear about Krishna and engage in practical services. That's all. The progress is guaranteed. Deepening of chanting is guaranteed. Primarily. Of course, one has to avoid the offenses. That part is there. But otherwise, avoid the offenses. Then just chant attentively. Hear about Krishna. Bhagavatam while you're reading. In that way, hear about Krishna. And engage in service to Krishna. Then it is just a matter of time. We notice that chanting becomes more attentive. From mechanical chanting, chanting becomes more with feeling, and chanting with feeling will advance or it will become more relishable as we go on and on. So there is nothing too much to do about chanting. It is very simple. Is that clear? It has to work. There is nothing, special secret for overnight improvement. If we are chanting and sleeping, we wake up and nicely chant. If we don't have attention, chant with attention. Push ourselves the best to attentively chant. Then hear about Krishna and engage in Krishna service. That's all. Chanting has to develop. Yeah. And if you are doing mistakes, correct that. Any further questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu. Yeah.
So is it that they think that their endeavor is the main thing and bhakti maybe that mercy may be required, but they think that their endeavor is the main thing. Is that correct to say that? They do recognize that bhakti is what is that also they don't recognize.
For a Mayavadi, as we know, if you ask the destination of a Mayavadi, it is not something which is positive. It is pretty much adhoga chandi tamasaha. It pretty much falls into that category. And if we consider genuine Brahmavadis, yes, they are dependent on their endeavors, but at the same time, the plus point is that they don't deny the personality of God. So that is the tinge of Sukriti. You can say tinge of bhakti. That can actually save them. So that can award Brahman realization. Since they don't deny the personality of Godhead. Whereas Mayavadis, since they deny the personality of Godhead, it is offensive. Means that's what they say. That the body, as it exactly it is mentioned in this verse, that They think opposite to this. They think that the body of Krishna is made of the 5 gross and 3 subtle elements. So that is offensive. So they have to go to lower birth or hellish planets. Yeah. Any? Yeah. Actually, these two both are connected. We can tolerate. If you are humble, then we can tolerate. What do we need to tolerate? And there are different aspects of tolerance. We have to tolerate basically the material tribulations around us if you want to perform devotional service. Body, mind, friends, relatives, so many things happen. So we need to tolerate all these things, different demands of the mind. We need to tolerate everything if you want to perform devotional service. So tolerance is different from humility, but if one has humility, then one can tolerate. And if there is no humility, then it is very difficult to tolerate. If one is arrogant, what will he tolerate? Is that clear? Yeah. Yes, Prabhu. Yeah, the 10 offenses that we recite every morning. 10 offenses, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the 11th one. Actually, there are 10 offenses. Bhaktivinoda Thakur also says there are 10 offenses, but he combines the 5th and 6th as one, and he adds the 10th offense, which is, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur's analysis, the 10th offense is being inattentive in chanting. So the 5 and 6 of ours, we say 10, and then it is also an offense to be inattentive while chanting. We tell like that. It looks like 11th, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur analyzes and he combines the 5th and 6th as one, because essentially it can lead to the same direction. So he also presents 10th, and this 10th one is being inattentive while chanting. So it is said inattentive chanting can cause all other offenses. They say one can focus on attentive chanting, then one will get the strength to avoid other offenses also. So that is one of the essential things we need to be mindful about. Then when we have that, then we will be able to. Another important thing is, you know, we'll offense to the devotees, and also we harbor material desires in the mind. And we do meditate, and at points we can even desire those things, which are very detrimental to Krishna consciousness. So when we have the attentive chanting, then we can let go those desires. Even though it's coming to our mind, we can say, I don't want to stay with these desires. I don't want to think about this again and again. I can let go of that. Is that clear? Yes, Prabhu. Eliminated by chanting. Yeah, it is not that we chant and we don't endeavor or we don't hear anything. Because if somebody chants without knowledge of scriptures, that chanting will be offensive chanting. Because one doesn't know much about Krishna, one doesn't know what offenses have to be avoided. So generally, chanting without knowledge will be namaparath. So if we want to pick ourselves from namaparath, to Namabhas and further to Shuddhanam, we need understanding. And we need to apply that understanding. So yes, what you're saying is right. Everything will go, but we need to apply that also. Say for example, if one needs Atyahara, right? You are mentioning Atyahara, right? Atyahara Prayasa, right? If Atyahara and Prayasa, they have a direct link to chanting. For example, if somebody is over-endeavoring or over-collecting, then there is no time for chanting, first of all. The chanting becomes the last priority. So if we are saying, yes, if we need attendee chanting, yes, if we are focusing our life, if we are making the chanting number one priority, and we are centering all other activities around this focal point of chanting, attentive chanting, yes, then everything else will be fine. All the other anarthas will go away. But it means we need knowledge and we need, okay, yes, this is my main activity and other activities is supporting this activity, and these are activities which are hampering my chanting. So when we work around this chanting, then yes, everything will work out nicely. Yeah. So one need understanding, okay. It's not just chanting, you know, without knowledge. That will be namaparath. Because we need to know Sambandhagyan. Without Sambandhagyan, chanting will not work. You know, it'll be very inefficient. Yeah. Okay. Any final point? Yes, Madhavi.
Did you say that at the beginning when we start chanting because we don't know much about Krishna, so we're committing any offenses in that state?
Yeah, you know, in the sense. When we are chanting, initially when we are chanting, of course we are committing offense to holy name. There is no doubt about it. Because, you know, we have material, we are maintaining material desires. You know, we may be offending devotees, still we may be offending devotees. You know, we may have so many other misconceptions. So yes, of course, our chanting is offensive chanting. But it's not said that, you know, we should stop this offensive chanting. In the sense, stop the chanting altogether. That's not the recommendation. So it is better to chant offensively rather than not chanting, right? So that is the point. So when we ask anyone to, okay, Prabhu, you start, or Mataji, you know, you start chanting Hare Krishna, it's obvious that they are going to chant with offenses. It is guaranteed. We also started, you know, still maybe chanting with offenses. We also started chanting with offenses with all material misconception. It's an offense to think that the Lord has a material form. We may have started chanting, you know, without understanding the spiritual personality of Krishna. So it's offensive. But that's okay. There has to be a starting point. But one shouldn't stay in the offensive state. That's why when one gets knowledge, then one can actually elevate oneself. So yes, of course. When we start chanting, it's an offensive chanting. It has to be. Is that fine? All right. Thank you very much. Gandharva Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Yeah.